Hi, and welcome to Parent Talk hashtag with Bev. Welcome. It's Sunday, 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 and I'm going to be talking to a mother, Mimi from Parent Power. She'll explain herself a little bit more. But remember, I'm just an ordinary mum with two young adults now living in my house. We're based in London, not major expert of anything, just sharing thoughts, people's stories, and experience in the hope that it will help somebody somewhere. So let's bring Mimi in. Hi, Mimi. Introduce yourself to our listeners.
Hey, Beverly, how are you today?
I'm blessed. I'm blessed. I'm blessed.
Amen, amen.
Go on. So introduce yourself to everybody because they don't know you like I know you.
Hi, everyone. I am Mimi, and I have two children, age 18 and 15. I'm a single parent. I love life. I like to have fun. Obviously, I like to focus on my children, their welfare, their well-being, and all that jazz. And yeah,
So,
that's me.
you've got, is it boy and girl, two girls?
I've got a boy and a girl. My son is 18. He was affected by the whole A-level debacle, even though he didn't do A-levels. It was quite minimized with the CTEC, but he was still affected by it. But thank God his grades have been reversed. So instead of getting a U, which the algorithm gave him because of his postcode, he got
What?
a, yes, he got a distinction in computer science, or sorry, and in IT, and he got the merit in PE, which is really good.
Okay, so you know that we're gonna have to unpick this, right? Because so what you're saying to me is that they were
Yes.
predicting the grades based on postcodes of kids?
Well, I'm assuming so. This was the big controversy inside the news, isn't it? You know, with the algorithm that the government had decided to bring up. I think it was supposed to be about fairness, but little Johnny over the river, I'm sure if he was going to Eton or somewhere, he would have probably got the grades that the teachers predicted. But obviously, us being on the other side of the river, my son didn't get that, you know, including his whole class. They were all, obviously, yeah, a lot of kids were marked down, very badly affected by it.
Wow.
Yeah, really, really bad.
That must have been
So
really
yeah.
stressful for him and you.
Yeah, it was, to be honest, because obviously it's a tale of two halves. My son, first and foremost, he does not want to go to university. He does want to do animation, so he prefers to do this by himself. Obviously, as a parent, I would like him to go, but I'm learning that he needs to make his own choices for himself because I don't want him to borrow all that money from student finance. I mean, if he wants to go, he can't access it. So I'm gonna be intuitive and listen to what he wants to do.
I mean, the beauty is, I suppose because of the way, I don't know, we're slightly different. When I was growing up, my mother was like, get your education, get your education, So it was a case of like, you didn't have a choice. You did your work back
Yeah,
then. I did CSEs,
absolutely.
and then you did your O levels, then you did your A levels, and then hopefully got to university. And if you had any crashes along the way, the goal was that you got back up on the horse and you were going to, as much as we possibly could, go to university, although my mum didn't
Absolutely.
understand what that really meant. Okay, so your son now has chosen where he's going and he's got in, he's got the grades.
Yes, he has grades, but he doesn't want to go to university. So we're looking at some other courses for him to do. He was very reluctant at first, but he called me. Was it yesterday night with an epiphany? Mum, in his very deep voice, I've decided that I know what I want to do. I'm sorry for wasting all the time. I know clearing is over, although I'm not too sure if that's true. And he was pretty much saying that he wants to do the animation. There's certain programs he's downloaded, and he's taking it from there. He's actually been doing quite a lot of animation for himself. So my friend, she's actually sent me a link for this careers service for him to be able to apply to. So hopefully that, because apparently it's an online course, so hopefully that will give him the skills that he needs for interviews, to be able to interact with other people on that platform. So I'm hoping that he'll be able to take it seriously. But I know his future's bright, so I don't necessarily worry that much about him.
So the so anyway, we can talk offline around some other stuff relating to that. I don't even know, because some other parents might be going through the same thing. But because of the 2020 issue around COVID and clearing and all the rest of it, you know, I one of the things I might think about is contacting the universities which offer the animation course and ask them what courses they recognise moving in, if he decides later on that he wants a pathway for him to go into in the university. You know, we don't want them to have adverse debt anyway, but also we have to think about not just getting them somewhere for now, but 5 years from now, if the course that he's doing, although he'll get the skills, if it will lead to something else. Because you know these people, what they'll turn around and say is that that course wasn't valid, we don't recognize it, blah, blah, blah. Absolutely. You understand? So, well, good luck with that. We'll keep in contact. We keep in contact anyway. So, yeah, you know, exactly. You can always use me as a source.
I'm very lucky to have you.
No, lucky to have you. But you know what I mean? We can use each other as sources. You know what I mean? Peer-to-peer parent support, you know?
Yes. And that's what it's about, collaborative practice.
Exactly. Well, exactly. Mm. Well, people don't even know how we know each other, but we'll get to that. And your daughter, we'll get to that.
Yes. Kayla May, or my daughter, she is 15 years old and she goes to the same school that I happen to work in, so that could be a different story. So obviously she was affected quite a lot by the COVID, you know, in terms of mental health, although I would say this was from before, to be honest with you. So yeah, that was quite difficult. So she didn't really do that much schoolwork. And it was tough. And I wasn't that parent that was going to force the schoolwork down her throat at the same time, because we just, obviously I'm doing social work, that's another story as well. So I'm thinking of Maslow's hierarchy of needs. And obviously one of the main things after food is safety. So we're not thinking about, you know, oh, how much grades can you get? We're thinking, are we going to survive the next day? You know, so that's the place that I was trying to get her to just make her feel safe, to make her feel loved, and, you know, and take it from there. She's obviously, sorry, go on.
No, I was going to say, I totally agree.
Yeah, she's obviously very bright, articulate. She does the King's Scholar program, which I thought was very beneficial to her with the interaction with King. So university doesn't seem so out of reach. So just about a little bit about my parenting journey. Obviously, as a parent, first and foremost, as a single parent, it's been incredibly hard. But I kept my children in tune, or help them raise their cultural capital through activities that they used to do, like gymnastics, football, dance, and visiting museums and exhibitions. I thought that was really useful. I have a keen interest in history, so I'd always go to a natural history museum, go on Black History walks, all that kind of stuff. So I think that really equipped her for secondary school life. And obviously she's in GCSE history right now, which I'm really proud of. I feel like her school journey has been quite difficult because she's quite introverted. And me as a member of staff, I obviously tried to have my boundaries. So obviously I didn't interact with her at school, but it was quite hard to see her, you know, not be as assertive as the other students. But I think one thing out of lockdown, I would say, is we was able to establish more of a relationship because my school was very supportive of her. Got a really fantastic member of staff that really gave her a lot of confidence and helped her with her resilience. So over the holidays, it's not a cultural thing, but we ended up cutting her hair because it wasn't growing out as well as we wanted it to. And I was really worried that when she goes back to school, how would she be able to cope? But she was absolutely fine, you know, so I was really happy about that. And I like that now as she's going back into school, she's really confident and she's looking forward to the next chapter, which is year 11.
I mean, I think I remember during the period, I think I was getting initially my daughter, the youngest, Jade, she she was doing really well, you know, with regards to in the lockdown, you know, she was studying regularly, you know, she got up, she showered, she got into the routine, she did this, she did some studying, blah, blah, blah. And that was all good. But then obviously there was a period where She lacked the motivation. And my thinking was, you know, I could either bash her in the sense of like, get on with your work, do this, study, and that, whatever. And I think I said a few words like, you know, have you done your work? You're doing your work. But like you, it was very much like, I didn't want to put too much pressure on her, because I've done a lot of work with my children along the way. And I have to, at some point, allow them to explore for themselves so that whatever I've been trying to teach, they either get it or they learn a new lesson.
Yeah,
and I remember the school kept calling. At one point, they kept calling me and saying, "Well, she's out of 32 students, she's 31. You know, she's not submitting work. Blah blah blah." And I said, "Listen, you know, George Floyd died, didn't it? And he not died. He was murdered. And the the big issue that's going on right now for me is about, and my family is about, are we safe?" Right? Because I remember you talking about safe and loved, right? And in the scheme of things, you putting pressure on my Pitney right now, is that really going to help her? No, it ain't. I'm sure she was embarrassed by some of the things that because I think my teacher did call one time, and I cuss him. I said to him, in the light of George Floyd and everything like this, I think this call is irrelevant.
Yeah, exactly.
And he put that, and I put down the form on him. Oh, the blasted cat's here now, scratching up herself on my bed. And I shut my door specifically so she don't get in, you know, and the cat, no, push her way through and is up on my bed now. Anyway, so if you hear any squishy scratching, it's the cat, right?
No, that's fine.
It's more important. It was more important for, I think, a lot of parents needed to people didn't understand, they need to understand that as black parents, safety for our kids is paramount.
Absolutely. Because it was really difficult, and I felt like there was just so many layers of you know, negative things that were happening, knowing that we were I hate saying it, but BAME, you know, we're most affected, but yet for me, I have to go out to work, you know. There was all these different layers, so it was tough, especially with the George Floyd murder. I remember one of the students writing on the school not website, but this thing called Edmodo, where the students can interact, and they just said the silence from the school was astronomical. And I feel like there was a point where, you know, somebody needed to speak up, and thank God my work colleague, she put through a PowerPoint together, and we got some students on Teams where they're able to talk and just release how they felt, you know, because was something that really needed to be explored. You know, it's not about them just doing their work. And I feel like even me as an adult, you know, my COVID journey, it was quite, obviously, it was really, really tough. And I was fortunate that I had, I was getting psychotherapy at the time, even though this was for an unrelated incident. I was glad that it happened during the COVID crisis, because I was dealing with my own mental health. And I think what helped me get through was being able to accept this is what the situation is. Because for you to be able to sort out mental health, acceptance is key. Literally, then you're able to think about, you know, self-healing. So that is something that really helped me, to be honest.
I mean, you know, touching on mental health, I think the work that I've been doing during COVID, I managed, I was helping a charity. I first of all started volunteering to help them to create the systems of how they were going to engage with families during this time. And so we've been calling them and talking. And what's really been playing out throughout all conversations is the increase of awareness that mental health has become a key a key thing out of COVID. You know, the anxiety, the stress, you know, there are people who have lost their jobs, there are people who can't feed their families, and we're having to feed their families, and also direct them to more sustainable support, because we're a small charity. But mental health is, it made me realize, I mean, that this was an issue. And then I got invited to a summit to present some of the things that are coming out of the lockdown. And I was like, you know, well, where do people go to vomit? How do they access information? Where do they get information? Where do they see therapists who look like them and speak the language like them and have a cultural understanding so that they're able to release themselves? And it sounds like you've been on that journey for yourself personally. You've also been able to do that for your daughter, okay, so that she's able to be much more confident. And that's that's kind of parenting capital that's not taught.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
You know, and not taught at schools. Can't be taught at schools. And I have to commend you for your bravery, first of all, for recognizing that you needed support and help. Secondly, for actually acting upon it and going and doing it. Thirdly, for openly even saying that you've gone for assistance and help and how it's begun to help you. Because you know, in our community, there is a real stigma around going for
mental health.
Mm-hmm. You understand? Because I've had counselling, but in before I got to that space, I was very, no, I don't need it. You're weak if you show that you need it. Whereas my attitude is completely changed from having gone through it myself and seeing how beneficial it is. But also I know that what you gave your daughter and gave yourself was an invaluable gift called space. You gave yourself space to be able to explore the things that you needed to explore in order to heal.
Yes.
Kudos to you. Kudos
to you. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Kudos.
I wanted to say where I got the help from, and that was from university. They were really supportive, you know. So during the lockdown, there was a lot of advice and guidance that were constantly given us. My tutor, she's absolutely amazing. I was able to get a lot of support from her. Mm. And with that help and support, I was able to, obviously, because I was still working during the lockdown. So from home, I worked. I had to produce resources. So to help students manage their anxiety. So each week, I literally record talking about just a brief script about what the what was inside the things that I had written up for the students, and I think the students really reacted well to the resources.
So tell people what you do. I mean, you know, job wise.
So I'm a behaviour support manager. So I support students who may be close to exclusion, or students who might need support with anxiety, friendship skills, social skills. So that's all the ELSA kind of supports. That's emotional literacy. So I do in class the observations. I do a whole load of stuff, and I absolutely love my job. I'm going to it.
Well, for you to work, you're working, is it full-time or part-time?
I'm working part-time now because I'm trying to get into social work. So I'm going into my second year of social work degree.
So you're sorry, you speak a little bit. You're getting quieter.
Sorry, I'm going to be going into social work degree, so it should be my second year. And I work part-time at the moment.
Yeah, okay. So, you know, full-time mum, part-time student.
Yep, part-time student. Yep.
And part-time work. You've got to fit a lot in.
Yeah, a lot in, and it's very difficult, but it's all about planning and, you know, I'm preparing myself. I feel like I'm a very organized person. I like to just get everything done. I don't like leaving things to the last minute, maybe except for my uni assignments. I deferred everything because the COVID crisis, it was quite difficult. But then, to be fair, for like I realized I had a online assessment, so I found out that I was dyslexic because I knew there was something, you know, wrong when I was writing and I was trying to recall information. So I felt quite bad about that, actually, because obviously in school way back in the day they might not have been able to assess needs, but it was a lot about, oh, your behavior is bad. But when I really had a learning need, so I don't think much has changed, to be fair.
To be fair, I agree. No, to be fair, I agree with you because, you know, I've worked extensively in the education system in various fields and guises. And, you know, one of the things when I was teaching in classes and I was managing a department, you know, the staff would say things to me like, oh, this particular student is problematic. And I'd be like, well, when I'm teaching them, that's not problematic, you know, because it's about... it wasn't just because it was because I looked at the student and understood, not just looked, but you did your assessments and you did your work and your class, your teaching according to the needs, the assessments that you had done with those students, so that you would know who was dyslexic, who was ADHD, who was so-called normal, but you know, no one's that normal. And you would adjust your teaching, you would adjust your teaching likewise. So when I was managing these teachers, I was like, well, have you done your assessment? And when I'd go into their lessons and do the observations, I would say, well, you're teaching to 3% of the class, and the rest you're not teaching at all. That's why they're not engaged. That's why their behavior is the way it is, you know, because you're not engaging them in their learning. You're not accounting for their learning styles. Anyway, we could talk about that another time.
Absolutely. And what came to mind immediately was the whole George Floyd situation and the microaggressions and things like that. And it just, oh gosh, for me, I just had to, because obviously we had to do training inside the school, and I do behaviour support plans for students, and I had to change the way that I wrote them, because I don't want that child to be labelled as a you know, aggressive or whatever. And I've noticed the way that some staff, they might you know, if a black child, for example, they might what is the word I'm looking for? They handle things obviously a bit differently to how the white children might handle themselves. So, and that means that the reaction from a teacher might be different as well. And obviously there's a lot of unfairness. That's the point I'm trying
to make. I mean, I'm just recalling when I was in class. So my learning style is writing. I write and I speak. In order to understand what I'm doing, I need to be able to have a conversation about it. So it's outside of my head in order for me to pull strands together. So what I used to find was that some of the white kids, you give them something to read, not just all white children, because this is just generalizing, right?
Yeah, generalizing.
But you would, you would give certain kids something to read and they would absorb it and they'd understand it. I found with some of the students who were from different cultures, you needed to articulate it, act it out, role play, you know, and then embed it in different ways, or ask the same thing in three different ways in order for this, for you to be sure that people got it. You would have to break down information in different ways as well in order, and then ask them to repeat that to you in the way that they understood it, so that you could assess that they actually got the point. Now that's a lot of work.
It is a lot of work, definitely.
But they, when they got it, they got it. You could move on.
Absolutely. Message received. And education is about differentiation, you know. You need to differentiate, you know, for each learning style and different learning needs. It's really integral.
It's integral. You're correct. So you know, where are you now? Because we're now with the adjustments to lockdown, you're back. You've always been at work, but you've been working at home. So you're still working at home or you're back in school now?
I'm back in school, and it was so lovely to see the new year 7th. So they went back on Thursday, whole school on Friday, and it was a nice atmosphere, you know. I was in some classes and it was just nice to see students back, you know, learning. And yeah, it was pretty nice, to be honest with you. Yeah, it was good to be back in the office, you know, getting back to the normal swing of things after 6 weeks holiday.
6 weeks holiday. Oh yes, some people had 6 weeks holiday. I think I need the holiday, because I've been working throughout. I've been furloughed from one job and now called back to that job to do some hours, and I'm still working for the charity part-time. I'm still trying to do my own thing, and and my daughter, the eldest, is going back to university Wednesday, and the youngest has gone back to school. And I've done a podcast because we were having dinner yesterday, and around the table, she was telling me the measures that they've put in place.
Yeah, it's a lot. A lot of changes. Don't have to go through this corridor, you have to go through that other way, and there's loads of changes.
Yeah.
But cleanliness has never been a new concept for me. I've always had hand sanitizer with me, I've always cleaned my office myself. So this is the new normal, isn't it? You know,
well, the thing, if you sat in a room with black people, we would all look at everyone else and laugh and say, you know, we wash hands as standard. As you say, we carry hand sanitizer. When we open a door, we go rinse our hand. Do you understand what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because you just don't know.
Absolutely.
So, you know, when people telling us to wash our hands as a measure, we were just like, really?
Exactly. But the irony is, we were the most affected, and that's linked to the kind of jobs that we do.
Exactly, you know? Yeah. So, I mean, no one's looking at that.
I won't forget, exactly. So when I was on the bus when this first happened, everybody on the bus was an ethnic minority, and the people, obviously they were going to work, and everybody that I saw when I got off the bus were white joggers, and I was like, what's going on here, this disparity, you know?
Listen,
so furloughed staff, etc., but... Yeah.
When we were in COVID, right, and they said you can't go outside. Mm. Well, because I play badminton and I go to the gym, four evenings of the week I was active. So I was like, you told me I can go out and walk. I'm going out to walk. What surprised me was the amount of white people I saw out running, spitting their saliva all over the place. And I was like, you guys have no idea. I'm not a mask person. I've done another podcast about my thinking around masks and all the rest of it. But it's not even just that. It's the social distancing. Because even if you don't wear a mask, if you're not wearing a mask for whatever reasons your reasons are, right, there is still a level of social distancing that you're supposed to keep. Yeah. And I think, was it Friday? What day is it today? Sunday. So in the week... Tenet, the film came out.
Tenet.
And a cinema had it on, right? So I booked tickets for me and the girls because we've not gone on holiday. We've not done a lot of stuff. And I was like, we're going to go, right? So we went. We were the second people in the theatre. We found a spot. We created our bubble. Let me tell you, we nearly fight with people in the day, you know. Because this person come and sat, like, all right, they said you're not supposed to sit in the row in front, right? But this person come to sit in the row in front, right, sort of in front of me. I was like, no, social distancing, move along.
Maybe they forgot.
This is what I no. Did you hear? Listen to my words, right? I said social distancing, move along, right? The woman said to me, "You don't have to be so rude." I said, "I beg your pardon, rude? I'm not being rude. I'm telling you, social distancing, move along." Right? I said, if you want rude, I said, I can get really rude. You understand? I said, I haven't even sworn at you yet. You understand? And then, so they moved along and then she decided to try and eye me throughout the movie, right? And I was like, I'm not even going to engage with you, right?
Yeah.
And then three white guys, so this is a white pair of white people, and then three white guys decided to come and sit behind me and the guys chatting away, no mask, and he's someone just turned around, but I turned around on him, right? And I said to him, social distancing. You're coughing all over me. What's the problem here? And people looked at me like I was an aggressive black woman. And I'm like, not social good. Distancing, people. Anyway.
How come I just wanted to find out why the cinema didn't enforce anything, really.
But... They had one little degga person at the door to see you in. And left everybody else to their own devices.
Oh, okay.
Because of social distancing. You understand?
That's crazy.
Anyway, we're getting off the point. Yeah. So how do we know each other, Mimi?
Well, we know each other through Parent Power. Mm. Yes. And Parent Power, obviously, is a group of parents who come together collectively to wage war against the education system.
Oh, my gosh, you said wage war. We're not waging
because
war.
Because we want fairer access to top universities. We want our children to be able to walk into any educational institution and say, you know what, we can go here, you know.
Mm.
So we've done campaigns to get into Oxford, into Cambridge, Imperial, and there's so much more that we've got to do.
Yeah, we've been involved in lots of stuff. I mean, you know, we started off with regards to higher education, but, you know, a lot of the stuff we're on about is sharing opportunities so that our children get access to that as well.
Absolutely.
We do campaign. I mean, I've been involved in, I'm involved in lots of stuff. And at the moment,
yes,
I'm involved
in... Yes, you are. The hands in too many pies, my gosh.
Well, you know, I mean, when we had the meeting, I made it clear. I can't.
Yeah.
I can't do any more. I've only got so much mental, and especially I've been on a mental health first aid course. So I realized that I'm dedicating some of the podcasts specifically just to talk about mental health, because I realized that there's a lot of stigma, especially within our community. And there's a lot of people I'm meeting who are willingly saying that they've got had mental health challenges, and even just trying to find the right words so that they don't we don't stigmatize ourselves any further is something that we need to explore. But we've known each other for like maybe 3 years or more. You know, because we've been there from the inception of Parent Power, even though, you know, different people may try to usurp the name, we know what we have been standing for and what we're about. We're about equal opportunity and access to education for all of our kids. And you know what I liked about Parent Power was that in the we have parents from all nationalities, all from all walks of life, from all you know, blended to single parent to single dads, you know what I mean? We've got a gamma ray of parents who are involved. So to reflect different students, I remember when we went to Cambridge, there was a Polish mother there with her daughter. There was a Canadian father whose his daughter was English, and they'd been here, you know, Graham, I think his name was. You know what I mean? So it isn't just a black thing, although people may think that. Yeah, exactly.
We're very diverse, diverse.
We are, we are. So I was, I think you've told us a little bit about some of the adjustments that you've kind of made as you're coming out of lockdown, and for you and your son and your daughter. You've also mentioned one positive thing that's come out of this for you is your relationship with your daughter.
I have a list.
Yeah, I was just getting to, are there any more, you know?
Should I do the challenges first?
Yeah, go ahead.
I felt in general the lockdown obviously was very surreal, but my three challenges was obviously my mental health and just knowing about our safety, because there was so much uncertainty. And Boris Johnson, it's like, you know, wear masks, don't wear masks, go out, don't go out. It was really confusing, you know. And I feel like the biggest challenge for me was being oversubscribed. So what I mean by that is I have a 2-bedroom house. Obviously, it's Hyde. I don't own it yet. And it was difficult because my son, he was sleeping in the front room. And obviously, I have a room. My daughter has a room because I didn't want to share with my daughter anymore as an adult. And my son, just the atmosphere was just so toxic. Every single day, telling him to do his coursework at the time. My daughter, she was going through her own stuff. Plus, I had my own coursework to do. It was one of the hardest things in the whole wide world, where literally I'll wake up every morning, I'll pray through the house and everything, hope for a good day. And he was just so belligerent, you know. And then one day he got up, he called my my cousins, so that's my aunt's sons, and he told me, didn't ask me, he told me that he's going to stay there. And I didn't stop him, you know. And That was hard. He hasn't returned home because he's happy to be there. And he's 18 now, so it's not like I'm not going to stopping him from doing what he needs to do. I know he's safe, and he's, you know, there's space for him there. But I'm just thinking, in the grand scheme of things, my son shouldn't have to move out of the house. Do you know what I mean? And there's such a wrong, you know, thing where the government are putting in money into the VRU, doing all this kind of stuff, you know. But the things that are really important is how are kids at home, you know, and how is home life impacting on education, you know, and mental health? There's all of these different strands, you know, and this is something that we really faced. I've cried to God. There's, you know, and it was a challenge. I'm happy that he's happy now every day. I love seeing my boy's face. I make sure he FaceTimes me every day, although he hasn't done it as much recently, other than yesterday. But it just like a disconnect. My son, I didn't ever envisage that a lockdown would make my son, you know, leave my home. Just what I mean. And that was really, 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 really hard.
And I think just to echo, you know, how your child leaves home affects how we transition to the next level of our maturity as parents. You know what I mean? If they go off to university, we've got issues and challenges around that. But it's like, oh, that's a positive step. But when they move out and you're kind of still trying to figure out and support them about where they're going next and their next steps. But, you know, if you're in a depressed state, you cannot see the future.
As they say, the future isn't ours, you know. We have to literally live each day, and that's exactly what we've done. And I know he is happier, and this is me going on to my positives.
Yeah.
You know, that with my son, I see that he's developing into a man, you know. He had his 18th birthday during lockdown. We went and celebrated at my aunt's house. And I'm so proud of him. You know, and I feel like with the whole education journey, where with Parent Power, I was able to really put in a lot of work into my daughter. So, like, for example, she did a lot of STEM kind of stuff, and, you know, I was able to really capitalize on that. But for him, I felt really guilty because I wasn't as educated as a parent. I worked in a school, for goodness sake, but there wasn't a lot of, you know, education for parents. You know, there's no book. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So I feel like with him, I feel a bit tearful now, but not that I failed him as much as he did football, he did all that kind of stuff. But I just didn't, there wasn't always that connection, maybe because the dad wasn't there, and it always felt like I was just number one enemy because I'm the mom, I'm the dad, I'm under everything, you know. So obviously he didn't want to listen to me, and he did say to me yesterday, in fact, "See, mom, when I don't want to listen to you, then it's because you're always telling me stuff." Do you know what I mean? Even though I'm meaning well, and that's what I'm trying to tell him. You know, but thank God my brother, you know, who is a godsend, I will tell my brother what's on my mind, and then he'll call Micah, and then he will help me, you know, and I think that's really helpful, because as I say, it takes a village to raise a child, and one of my work colleagues who really does support me, because obviously he's taught my son as well. So it's I've just had a lot of that support. So another positive is spending more time, you know, with Kayla. So before it was really negative, she didn't want to ever talk to me or whatever. So there was even this Lewisham Youth Theatre thing that they tried to get her to do over the laptop, but she didn't want to engage with it. But we started to grow, and it's like before it was like loggerheads. There's something bad that I did, I'll confess.
No, you don't have to confess. You don't have to confess.
I'm going to. I threw her phone, literally, because I was so upset with her, you know, because of how her, you know, belligerence was. And, you know, I just did that. But then when I did the psychotherapy and I spoke to the therapist, she's like, you needed to just let all of that anger go. Maybe it was just the whole situation. So I'm just happier that since I did that, she was able to be so much more nicer to me and was able to really develop a better relationship.
I think when they see that we're human, when they see that the parents are human, I mean, it's about having a balance, darling. Right, it's about having a balance, and you know, I mean, it sometimes they need the anger needs to be measured, right? Because when I was growing up, my mother's anger towards me was not measured, it was full force out of control, and I only learned how to be a bit more balanced in the last 10 years. Yeah, and my daughter's what, 19? So for the first 8 years of her life, she got an unbalanced mother who was very angry and out of it, and, you know, was extreme, either extremely angry or extremely passive. And trying to have a balance for yourself, you know, the therapy helps. The therapy definitely helps.
Yeah, I feel like, you know, black kids, black people of color, BAME, they should be able to just get therapy, not just get therapy. They need to get therapy because there's been so many layers of oppression with all of, you know, this COVID and all these problems. We should have therapy on tap. It shouldn't be because you know how to navigate the system, that's how you get the therapy. It needs to, because it will stop a whole heap of unhappiness and, you know, mental ill health. Because I should have said it from the beginning, but when it's mental health, I'm thinking that's when things are good. When it's mental ill health, that's when things are not so good, you know. But going back to the three positives, you know, I feel like my daughter's much more resilient. She's growing, you know, and we've been able to accept the situation, and that's what I've said before. We've been able to pick ourselves up, and we're ready for the next chapter. We feel grateful. That's one of the most important things. It's something I wrote into, you know, the thing that I said to my students as well. Gratitude is a must, and it's key. Because, you know, I'm thinking of coffee and the sun. Gratitude is a must, you know, because you're not promised tomorrow, you know. Look at my favorite, one of my favorite stars, Chadwick Boseman. It's like, and this is, oh gosh, it's going off tangent, and this is why I would go into school, you know, on Black History Month with, you know, my Black Panther costumes, because I was the only Black member of staff that would go in their skin. You know, if that makes any sense, because I'm not Cinderella, but that's a different story. But just,
you know. Oh, girlfriend, we got so many interviews to do about. I remember when I was working at this particular place, right, and I started dressing more corporate. Mm. I even put weave in my hair, which was I was doing anyway, but the colours became more blonder. Right. And then I realized that, you know, that absolutely nothing I could do was ever going to change my skin. So I could wear blonde hair. I could wear blue hair. Well, I couldn't really because I was at work. But they accepted the blonder, Aness. They accepted my corporate dressing. They accepted me coming to the pub with them. They accepted me going to the Christmas parties, because it made them feel that I was like them. But in actual fact, being more like them was less like me. Which caused more. Which was more problems for me. You understand? Yeah. So, you know, as I say, I think the challenges and the positives that you got from that, and where you are with your family now, is fantastic.
Yeah, we're so much more happier, and we've fixed up the house now. So I'm sitting in my lovely kitchen, and I just feel so happy. Except for my, you know, my bedroom for the first time yesterday, and it just felt so good. You know, I think my only piece that's missing, obviously, is my son, but I know that he's safe, he's well. You know, he can come back and sleep in the living room anytime he wants.
Yeah, the door's not like you've kicked him out and you'll never come home.
No.
It's not like you know, it's like some parents, their children are gone and they're not coming home, they're not coming back. He's around still, and that's a real blessing. He's happier, it makes you happier.
Yeah, definitely.
Well,
he's my
boy, your son, your boy, your son. But you know, you're getting ready for the next phase of your parenting, whatever that may be, as long as I feel that, you know, one daughter's gone, basically, you know, she's at uni, and
uni, yes,
she'll, you know, she's going to be, you know, listen, I could do a whole podcast about that, mate, that's another story, you know, but I think just thinking about us as parents, you know, it's about being kind to ourselves, loving ourselves enough to help us prepare for the next transition in our lives as adults, you know, as parents whose children are older. You know, I mean, if I can get some older parents on the podcast to give us a light of where we're heading to, you know, then that would be great. But I think where we are right now for both of us is where we need to be. Yeah.
Absolutely.
So I just want to say thank you so much. You said a lot of stuff, and I didn't really want to unpick every single thing that you were talking about, like cultural capital and stuff like that. But there was one thing that I wanted to say is I did a podcast about guilt. Guilt is, if nobody told us that guilt is always going to be there as a parent. We feel guilty if we do. Yeah. We feel guilty if we don't.
If we don't, absolutely.
Yeah. It's managing the guilt and those feelings that make us more balanced individuals, make us more balanced parents. And with my balance, I'm able to be authentic and honest with my children where I can be, you know, where I can be and where's relevant for their age.
Absolutely.
You know, this morning the girls came in, they bounced into my bedroom, like you, they renovated the house. I also sold my car, got rid of it, and got myself a new car, which was a huge, huge thing for me. But because it was about getting a car for me and not for the family.
Congratulations.
Amen. All right. But they came into the bedroom this morning and they were talking about, they've been watching some film, and one thought that if anything happened to them, that I would cry and pray. One thought, all I would do was cry and pray. And the other one said, no, mum would hunt the killer down. And I said to them both, actually, I would do all three. You know what I mean? Mm. I said, I would hunt the killer down. I would, and I would cry and I would pray. But I said, you need to understand that no matter what, even if you're not here, if you're not home, I've got your back, no matter what. Absolutely. Even if I disagree with what you're going to say or do, or how you do it, and I will tell you that I disagree, or why I disagree and how I disagree, but never deny that I love you. I will never deny that I love you. And then we talked about other stuff, you know, but I'll save that for another podcast. So
pretty powerful what you just shared. I loved it.
Girlfriend, thank you for taking your time out your Sunday afternoon.
No problem.
And I'm sure, would you be willing to come back again and talk to us around any other stuff to do with parenting?
Absolutely, whenever you're ready.
Okay. So listeners, thank you so much for, you know, being involved in this conversation. As we say goodbye, wishing you and your family the absolute best for the week coming ahead. Just remain safe, and for now, we're out.
Thank you so much, Bethany.
Oh, you're welcome, my sweetheart. Thank you.